World War II, a time of unrelenting global trauma, stretching from 1939 to 1945. It involved all of the great powers of the time. It was the most destructive episode in the history of civilization. It required its major forces to dedicate their entire military, economic, industrial, and scientific capabilities to the cause of warfare. Estimates of the death toll vary, from 50 million to 85 million worldwide. World War II took the art of war to new and appalling heights through massacre, genocide, remorseless bombing raids, starvation, disease, and the first use of nuclear weapons. The rats of Tobruk are known for their endurance and tenacity. Lawrence Henry McEvoy can add the quality of inventiveness to those virtues, for he was only 16 when he enlisted for war service. He kept quiet about his actual age. Nicknamed Bill by an uncle, and the name stuck throughout his life, he eventually became president of the Rats of Tobruk Association. Born in Broken Hill.
Born in Broken Hill on the 6th of February, 1924. Father, Joseph. Mother, May. Niece, Simpson. I went to Morgan Street Infant School when I was about four, and it was just a common school. Nothing happened there, and then I got into primary school at North Broken Hill. I was there, I passed my certificate to go to high school. I was about 12 years of age, or 11 or 12, I don't know. I stayed there until I got into the intermediate school. Stayed there for about 3 months, and then I left. Why I left, my dad wasn't working, and I had three sisters, and times were hard. So I couldn't get a job in Broken Hill. So I went walking. Walked down to the Murray River. Walked further along the river. Kept walking until I got home again.
Long way to go.
I beg your pardon?
It's a long, long way to walk.
Oh, well, when I've got nothing to do, walk. Anyway, I went down, war had started. And I went down to enlist. There were three or four other people ahead of me. So I got up to the recruiting officer. He looked at me. What in the bloody hell are you doing here? Go and do your homework. Which I did. Which I didn't do. I had none. Anyway, that was in June 1940. Recruiting stopped in December and opened on the 30th of January, and I was first in the line there, and I passed, and a week later I went down to Adelaide to be enlisted. I passed all exams, all physical, and then I was put or placed into Wavell camp. Thin blanket on the floor, a tarred floor, and two blankets. That was in February. I was 17 then.
Yes, you'd enlisted at just 16, only 16, when you enlisted the first time.
Yeah, when I was 16.
Did you put your age up? Did you tell them you were older?
No, I didn't tell them I was older. They had to guess that. And I'll tell you a bit later on about that.
Right.
Anyway, we were in Wavell for about a month, then up to Woodside. Woodside was full of World War I soldiers, and they were telling us what to do, mainly how to get out of trouble. However, that was all right. I made a mate, a fellow by the name of Peter Coll, C-O-L-L. He said, "Where do you come from?" And I said, "Broken Hill." "Oh, I came from Sydney. I was a thief, a robber. I got caught, but nothing happened. I was in the middle of Sydney Harbour Bridge, and the police were coming from both ends, and I had a bag full of bullion. Over the side it went." He said, "Can you read? Can you write?" I said, "Yes." Pulled out a letter, and he said, "Read that letter to me." I said, "No, that's from your wife or your girlfriend." "No, it's from my wife. You just read that to me." So I did. And he gave me 10 shillings. I said, "Why did you give that to me?" "Not the 10 shillings, the letter. I can't read, I can't write." Next day, he wanted me to write a letter to his wife. So I did. He gave me another 10 shillings. Right. And we became mates. There's a photo of him in there. Anyway, there was another fellow, and he was a wool buyer for the French government. He said to me one night, "You going out?" I said, "No." "Want to go to a party?" I said, "Yes, I wouldn't mind." So we went to a party. It was a good party and a bad party. I got drunk.
Mm-hmm.
However, next week, he said to me, "Watch that gate and don't move from there. I'm going out. I don't want to get caught." I watched him going out. I watched him come back, and he was loaded with two big flagons. I said, "Where did you go?" "Went to the hotel." "Where's your water bottle?" and he got it, emptied it, and filled it with rum from these bottles. And he went around to all his mates, and they all got a bottle of rum. Next week, we were on the train to Sydney. By the time we got to Sydney, there was no rum left. So we went on board a ship, the Isle de France. We were on there for 2 days, and away we went. We called in at Fremantle. We had a good trip to Fremantle. The boat rocked a bit, or the ship rocked a bit, but we had some leave there. 2 days, I think it was. Then off we went. Next place, we landed at Colombo. Before then, I got mixed up in some unloading party. We were sent down below to load up with potatoes for the cookhouse or the galley. We'd finished that. We were walking around. What else is on this ship? You're the youngest. Get up there. I got up there. I said, I can get in over this fence. I did. Nothing else here but coffins. Ooh. Anything in them? No. I said, there's some boxes here. What are they? I don't know. Carlton United.
Yes.
Something. What was that? Carlton United something. We'll be over the fence and we'll get some. They all jumped over and opened it. It was beer.
Yeah.
We all had a guts full of beer, only to be caught. Nothing happened. So anyway, we went on leave. But before we went on leave, I think it was 20 rupees. And I went up to get some tobacco. But two fellows, they said, where are you going? I said, to get some tobacco. No, you're not. You're going to the two-up school. Uh-huh. I went there and I came out. I couldn't put any more money in my pocket. It was stuffed, bulging out, and money was dripping out. So I was their host in Colombo. We went into the Goldface Hotel, which was reserved for officers. And we were raw privates. But we were shoved into a corner and we were paying top price for English beer. We got shot out of there after a couple of beers. We could hire bathing suits. They had a swimming pool and a 25-foot diving pool, a diving. We went up on this diving board. Who's going first? Silence. You'll do. That was me. And I did a perfect dive. They all came down. Then we got on the rickshaws and did a tour of town and got back to the ship half full. Next day, I went up on my own, up into the mountains, and watched the tea planters and the natives. Or they were treated badly. However, none of my business. Came down and went back to the ship. We left the next day, I think it was, and we went and landed in Ismailia. It was, we camped there. No, we stayed on the ship there. And I started diving off the ship and swimming across the canal. Back and back and back and back. Next thing, half the ship was doing it. However, we got all called aboard and we got onto a train and went somewhere. Finished up in a camp in Palestine where we stayed We stayed there for a couple of weeks, I think, and I went into a hospital. I was spitting blood, but they didn't find anything wrong with me. Then we got split into two parties. One party went to Alexandria. One party were booked for Tobruk. I was in the Tobruk party. It wasn't long before we were in Alexandria and we were told we were going on that ship. We waited for darkness. And the ship was one of the fastest in the Royal Navy, HMS Abdil. It was a mine-laying cruiser. And soon as everyone was aboard, away we went. We got opposite a place called Solemn. And they sent some planes out to sink the ship. Everyone was told to go down below, but I didn't hear it. I was sitting there just on my own amongst all carriages of this and that, mainly ammunition. Anyway, the ship opposite us was sailing almost level with us, and one of the sailors said, "That bloody ship is going to get sunk." The torpedo went under the ship and kept on going. Then the planes all left us. we landed in Tobruk in darkness or early morning. We disembarked quickly. I got sent with three or four other fellows for the 48th Battalion. I got there and a fellow said, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm Lawrence Henry McAvoy." That's a sweet name. So I didn't know what to say to him about that. He was one of the original fellows, and this was in the middle of June. He'd been there for 3 months. My eyes boggled. Anyway, he said, "You better come down. We're in a post. We'll walk there." When we walked about a mile and got to the post, a concrete post, a big long trench concreted from here to the wall along, and about from that bar to the window wide.
So we're looking there about 8 to 10 metres in each case. Significant fortification, pretty big.
Yeah. And he said, "Have you got any bedding?" "No." "Right, you sleep on the floor." And I did. And about midday, I got woken up. "Now I'm going to tell you a few things. Listen and keep your mouth shut." So I did. He told me how to be safe, or try to be safe. And he said, "You'll know all about it tonight." God, I wonder what's going to happen tonight. Tonight came, and the corporal, he was Charlie Lamprey, or he was a bushy. Anyway, he walked me over to all about 30 or 40 yards away from the concrete post. He said, "You stay there and see what happens. There's a patrol going out tonight and they're coming back. You'll know when they're coming back. They will whistle and say who they are. Anyone else whistles, you stay quiet." Well, I suppose I had a case of frightenedness. What's going to happen to me? What do I look for? Anyway, there, about 3 o'clock, whistle came. "We're coming back. It's Charlie." "All right. Okay, come in." So they came in. I stayed out until next light. Came back. Charlie Lamprey said, "Good fella, now I'm going to teach you a few things today." So I thought, it's not a bad job. That'll do me. So next day, Charlie got me, and what do you know about the Bren gun? Nothing. I haven't even seen one. I'll get one. and I'll show you how it works, why it works, and how you will work it. All right. Which he did. That night, he said, we'll go out and we'll have a couple of shots with this. And we just got outside. I loaded it. Right. Anything. Fire at anything. And I did. No kick. No nothing. You're right. We'll go back. So that happened. Within a month, I was out on patrol. Yeah. It was a reconnaissance patrol. Everything went all right. We found some ITIs, and they were putting up Dennett wire. Righto, we watched them do it, and I watched them, how they worked it, and that, and we went back. Following that, not often, but we went out on fighting patrols. That's when I first had action. I had just my rifle with the bayonet on it. I never used the bayonet, but I used the rifle with bullets. Came back, no casualties, but we caused some. But it wasn't always like that. We didn't do too many patrols. I was in B Company, but C Company, they used to look for patrols. They had one fellow, a fellow Tex Weston. He used to go out on patrols on his own and with half a dozen men, and he'd always rake up trouble. That was all right, but what I heard about it, he was very dangerous. We usually stayed in those concrete places for 2.5 to 3 weeks. But it was nearly the end of the time allotted that we stayed there, so we went back and was relieved. We went back to the Red Line, and we stayed there, generally stayed there for about 10 days. And then I'll skip a couple of those places where we went, but the worst place we went was in the Salient. The Salient was caused by the Germans and Italians. They attacked in April and May and took a slice of the outer defences, which made a little circle inside our perimeter. Between the new area, we were camped in dugouts. They could only go down about 2 feet or thereabouts. and each man had his own dugout, which was about 50 to 60 yards from the enemy, which in the daytime you didn't above the ground. But at the night time, generally, patrols would go out and go behind the enemy lines and disrupt some of their doings, which was concreting or putting up something else like a new post. Yeah. But they were busy and so were we. But it was an awful place. They, in the daytime, they used to lather us with mortar shells. But in the evening, there was a recognised dinner time, which both sides paid notice to. If it was for an hour, 1 minute later, and you get shot.
Yes.
If you were seen outside. And that was that, but it was a good truce. It only happened in the salient.
Yeah.
Other posts, they didn't have that truce. However, I went out on just a couple of patrols behind the German lines, and it wasn't happy. We just go out on a reconnaissance, and what we saw, we noted. And that was handy for the next time we went out in there. We were always glad to leave the salient. But sometimes a German called out one day, "Give us a song." He got abused badly. "No, I'm serious. Give us a song." And we had one fellow there, a German fellow, by the name of Hoffman, Bernie Hoffman. He said, "No, let him sing a song first." And they did, in English. "Where did you learn to speak bloody English?" They would tell us they didn't always live in Germany. They used to go to school in England.
Can you remember the name of the song?
No. No, it used to be a popular song, right. But I was no songster. But they said, "Now, can you sing a song?" Silence. "Come on now." And old Hoffman, Bernie Hoffman, he sang a song, a child's song in German. That was very good. "Have you any more?" "No." "Righto, the war's on again."
Yeah. You yourself were wounded. You got a cut from barbed wire, I believe.
Oh, only in the leg.
Yeah. And then you were relieved. You left Tobruk October 1941. You were going to tell me how the army allowed you to enlist at the age of 16. How did that happen?
They didn't allow me. They didn't know. But later, now in Palestine, we had a... Wait on, yes. We had a colonel. Colonel Windeyer.
Yes.
He wanted to get all the youngsters out of the unit. We had a commanding officer called George Tucker, F-A-G Tucker. He came to me and he said, "Oh, can you tell me your date of birth?" I said, "Yes." Told him 23rd of October or whatever, 1920.
Yes.
And he really went over it again. Now, how old are you now? I said, "I'm 21. "You sure?" "Yes." I said, "It's in my pay book." And he let it go at that.
Yes.
Two fellas got sent home, and they were 17. One of them joined the Air Force.
Right.
He finished up getting a DSO.
Right.
He went to England and was piloting a bomber, and he got into trouble, and he landed back half on fire, but he got the DSO for that. And he was just 19
yes.
when he got that. Anyway, that... Yes, we went in to many posts, but at last they said the 18th Brigade, that was the 7th Division unit, they're going to be relieved by the Polish troops. That was in August. And they went out, the Polish, the 9th, 10th and 12th battalions. They went out by ship and the Poles came in. We wondered when we went out. So we wondered for months. So we were told to pack up and be ready to leave. We went down into Tobruk near headquarters and we had to go into the caves, which was worse than the front line. It was full of rats.
Yes. Yeah.
The rats, one went right across here on me.
Across your face, right across your face.
Right yeah. across my mouth.
Yes.
And I wasn't happy. Anyway, we boarded the ship, and one officer left his case on the wharf, on the where we left.
Right.
I wanted. I was the bunny I had to go and get it. So I was the last one on that ship.
Right.
We came out, and as the photo said, we were happy. But the 13th Battalion, a New South Wales battalion, their ship got sunk going into Tobruk, and they had to stay there until it was relieved. I went down to a place called Kantara. I think it was Kantara, and we got fed. And the fellow who was dishing out the tucker, I said, put another spoonful in there. What's this? The charity hospital? I said, now you see me, you big bugger, put it in there or I'll tell your mother. And he looked at me. What in the hell are you doing here? He was the prefect of high school.
Your old school, yeah.
He lived in Newcastle. I forget his name now, but I found out he was the secretary of the Ratchetabrook right. Association here. And he wrote me a letter and told me when he was discharged what he did. He went up to be a headmaster of some New South Wales school.
But after Tobruk, after leaving, you went back, you went to Syria, through Palestine.
Lebanon, yeah.
And then into Egypt.
And back to Egypt.
And then there was more action for you.
Yes.
Namely the first battle of El Alamein.
There was the first battle of El Alamein. We got to a place called El Shamama. And we had a few days rest there. And then we went up, not too far from where we were going to attack. But there was an empty, there was a carriage on the railway line. We went and had a look at it. It was full of beer. So we took some. And we drank it on that day. Next morning, we attacked. We had no casualty the next day. But the next day, we got hell knocked out of us because the Germans had brought their tanks on.
Yes.
A mate of mine, he had a Sanger that deep.
About.
And the Germans.
10 centimeters, yes.
Ran over him.
Yes.
He got up and he spelt my clenched fist. And the tank turned around, he dived back, and he got screwed down onto that bottom of that trap. I went up to him when the tank went away, and I said, what's wrong, Blondie? He said, the bastard tried to kill me, and he couldn't move. I said, I'll get some way for you to get out. So I got some medical orderlies and they took him back. But he came back later. Oh. However, we had some sticky bombs. We had practice with them on old cars and all that sort of thing. We knew how they worked. You'd pull the plug, you'd slam it on where you want it to go, and then you ran back, and then it blew the tank. And it worked well. The first fella that tried it against a big tank was a fella in that photo, and he was, in civil life, a soccer player. Mm-hmm. However, he got killed. But that's the way things go. But we had only what they call honey tanks. They were just small, and a rifle bullet would go into it. But we got relieved by some bigger tanks, and they took over from the honey tanks. And I watched a tank battle. We were on the top of a hill, the Hill of Jesus, and I could see it all. Anyway, both sides lost tanks. We lost, I don't know, I didn't count them. I suppose 16 to 20, and the Germans lost about 10 or 12.
Yes. Yes.
But they came back the next day. But that night, we were just in a pair of shorts and a pair of boots. If you had socks, you wore them. If you had a shirt, you wore it. But the temperature in the daytime would go up 50 degrees, and in the night time under zero. And we had just a pair of shorts on.
And terrible shortage of water, I believe. Can you describe that to me?
The water. We used to get water piped along to us. The Germans found out. They came in overnight, stopped all that water. That was all wasted. And they blew it up from one place to another. But we had plenty of fleas.
Yes.
Rats, or anything that walked or crawled. Lice, anything. Our provisions got knocked off on top of the Hill of Jesus. Everything was burnt. We couldn't even get anything to eat. That was the whole B Company.
Mm.
It only lasted, that attack, for 10 days, I think. From the 10th of July 1942 until the 15th Battalion got into... No, the 28th Battalion, that's a Western Australian battalion. They got caught, and nearly the whole battalion was taken prisoner. That was almost the end of that battle. At the end of El Alamein, we had 51 walking.
Yes.
I did have how many were killed, but there was a lot. 200 odd, 300 odd.
Yeah.
However, We were the worst hit of all the battalions, except the 28th. The four companies had prisoners taken from them, or made up from them. Yeah. However, we got relieved and went into training again.
Yes.
Training, sometimes you were put on the back of a truck. It will travel 20 miles an hour and you had to jump off and attack. Or there'd be three coils of Dennett wire. I had a mate, Bill Barker, and we were two bunnies. We used to rush at this Dennett wire, throw our rifles down on it, hold them down with our bodies, and then they'd trip over us on our backs.
Mm.
We were mortar men. The company would go forward, we would be back, and we would try to get a mortar bomb to go about 10 yards from them as they're advancing. We objected. We had no casualties, but we lost our objection. We kept on going. So we could have been good mortar men. However, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Now, victory at El Alamein. Well, what happened to you after that, after the Battle of El Alamein?
Well, Alamein started with a big 960-gun salute. It was their big... Most of the artillery were there to see us off. And it fired for half an hour.
Yes.
And then we got spoken to. It stopped. We got spoken to and told what to do. That is, go forward, get your objective, and then wait for more orders to go forward again and get the objective again. We went, that 2nd 24th Battalion, they were in our brigade. They did, at 10 o'clock that night, they went forward, had a bit of trouble, but got their objective. And then we went forward, went another 1,500 yards, and we got our objective,
yeah,
with little trouble. And we dug in. Some other units, they did not make their objective, but they did the next day. The next day was really quiet, but in the afternoon, a tank came up. I was in the machine gunners then, on the Vickers gun.
Right.
It came up, stood about 50 yards ahead of us, swung his gun around on us, then swung around and got what he wanted, an anti-tank gun. One shot and it blew up. But there were two. And the other one fired at him and it knocked him out. I said, train that gun on the back. They will get out the escape hatch. And just as I said it, three of them came out. we got the lot.
Yep.
Meanwhile, it was just another fellow. He got killed, and one of our stretcher bearers just strolled off along the battlefield as though he was going down to the pub. And he got to him and he's dead. And so was he. He got shot. That was on the Sunday, I think it was. And we got word you to take Trig 29. So our gun, the Vickers, it was carried by me, and the tripod was carried by my mate. And everywhere we went, a shell would land just as we left. Three or four times that happened, and I got out of that culvert and I said, we're going to go to Trig 29. No, they wouldn't go. I said, come on, we're going. No. And I brought my rifle up. I said, I'm going to say, go one more time, and then I'm going to shoot the bloody lot of you. One fellow I went to school with, and he was my best mate. I said, right, you coming? No. And I cocked my rifle, and I said, you've got one chance. Yeah. And one of them said, oh, come on, we'll go now. I would have shot the four of them. We got up. And we were the first on top of Hill 29.
Yep.
Just as we did, over on the coast, the gun went off, and I got blown up. Our road went up that high.
Foot high, yes.
It landed just next to me. Our lieutenant got a leg blown off. I got shot in the arm. And that was all. I was looked down, I had blood all over me. So I decided I'm not staying up. I couldn't put my arm down. And I went back. I struck the 2nd 17th Battalion. I said, could you fix this? Yep. Where's your field dress? And I gave it. And he said, it's not long enough. I'll get my own. So I got my arm. It's still in the air. He said, now get back to the dressing station. And I did. Three doctors there, nothing wrong with him. They took that off. We'll bandage that up. He can go back.
This is the right arm you're showing me, right arm.
Yeah. So I was still there. And he tried to pull that arm down. He couldn't. We can't send him back. He's got to go to hospital.
Right.
I'm living it again.
Yes. Yes.
However, it took them a month to get that arm down.
Right.
Even that far.
Right.
And I was in hospital then for 14 months.
Right.
They couldn't find a doctor to fix that up. It had blown the nerves out.
And you couldn't salute.
I had no one there to salute. No. 14 months, and then a doctor down here at Dawes Road. He said, I just fixed up one of your A Company people with that same trouble.
So this is the Repat Hospital at Dawes Road in Adelaide. You got back there, yes?
Yeah, he got done out at Hampstead.
Right.
But when I went in, he said, I've got bad news. His was not a success.
Right.
So he did mine. And it was not a success. That's because I've still got no feeling in there and that.
So I'm looking now at your hand, your right hand, and you've got no feeling in the fingers or the thumb there at all.
But that gets sore.
Yes. Now, so you were invalided out of the forces, and what did you do after that? Phil?
What did I do? I went back to Broken Hill.
Yes.
And I joined the post office.
Yep.
I was not 19, but I was a junior. I got £7.20 a fortnight. Yep. I got more than that in the army. Until 2 years. I was on 100% pension, war pension.
Right.
But that's what I had to live on.
Yeah.
And then when I turned 21, well, what happened? When I turned 20, oh, that's right, I became an adult.
Yeah.
That was 2 years after. I worked in the post office there for another 2 or 3 years, and then I came down to Adelaide.
Right.
And worked the post office then, and I thought, it's no good to Lawrence Henry. So I did an examination, passed, and went into the 3rd Division. There's a 4th Division in the 3rd Division.
Of the public service.
Yep. Public service.
So, to wrap things up, Bill, let's just think back to Tobruk, El Alamein, Rats of Tobruk. How proud are you of those achievements? Because I believe you are the last from the 2nd 48th, the last one now to survive those remarkable historical battles. What are your feelings when you reflect on those achievements of yours in the time of war, on active service?
Well, there's not many left in a battalion. Wouldn't be 10 or 12, but there's 4 of us left who survived Tobruk.
Yeah.
When I came back, or came into Adelaide, I joined the Rats of Tobruk.
Yeah.
And I became a president of South Australia for 7 or 8 years, and then I became a vice president of the federal Rats of Tobruk, and finally the overall president of the Rats of Tobruk, and I finished up winding it up.
Can you just tell me how proud you are to be a rat of Tobruk? What does it mean to you?
Well, I really can't answer that question. I think I would say I'm not a proud man. But when the time comes, if someone says, "Are you a rat?" I nearly cry. I say, yes, I went there and I stayed there and I came out. And there's very few of us left now.